Got my sound up.
There he is. Welcome.
Vice Chair Horsick.
Hi.
Ready?
I am.
All right. Yes, sir.
Amy Joyce. She's trouble. I think Amy will be. So you're Patrick today.
There we are.
Hi, Ben.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this fine committee on transportation and economic development on Friday, May 25th, 2015. We have a number of bills that we're going to be moving today. We will be doing our public hearings first, our work sessions second, and we are honored to have Senator Olson here today, who has come down to work on a bill, Senate Bill 943. So our first item on our agenda will be to open a work session on Senate Bill 943. And I will look to Ms. Petrino. Welcome, Ms. Petrino, to Transportation. This is your first time here
this year.
We're delighted to have you.
Public hearing?
It's a public, yes, public hearing. Did I say work session? I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 943.
We'll
thank you for being here.
We'll take a work session.
That would have been a great thing, wouldn't it,
the
Senator?
The senator would be very happy to have that.
And I think we'll just take a minute and let Ms. Petrino give us a little update on what we're looking at today.
I will. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 943 would prohibit counties and districts from imposing a vehicle registration fee on vehicles registered to an employment address when the registered owner's residence is not in the same county as the employment address. Minimal revenue impact, no statement issued, same with a fiscal.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Alan Olson. I'm a senator representing Senate District 20. This bill came about when several police officers contacted me, and they work for the city of Portland as police officers, and they want to remain anonymous, so they register their vehicles in the city of Portland where they work, but they live in Clackamas County. Because of that, they have to pay a higher registration fee. So we talked about it, brought ODOT in and chatted about it a little bit, and came up with this legislation that says that if you are remaining anonymous, whether you're a public employee, a police officer, or whatever, and you have to register in an area that has higher registration fees, you need to pay the registration fees of your county. So that's the very simple part of it. It passed the Senate side unanimously. And it's just to help those people out. And apparently, Ms. Joyce will come up and talk about it. There's a lot of people that need to remain anonymous. And so therefore, rather than they having to pay the higher fees, this bill just says pay the fees that your county charges.
That's great. Thank you.
Pretty simple.
I think there are probably a number of people who will appreciate seeing this bill.
Thank you.
Do we have any questions for the good senator? Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for being down here. I hope it was worth the trip.
An hour home, but I'll do it.
Well, enjoy your weekend, Senator.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to Senate Bill 943? Ms. Joyce? Okay. Thank you. Oh, there we go. We do have a list.
Chairman Hewitt and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, and Ms. Petrino and Senator Olson both did a great job summarizing what the bill does, but just to get into a little bit more detail. So there's a statute that DMV implements that allows people in public service, mostly law enforcement or people who fulfill that kind of role, to, for safety purposes, utilize their work address in DMV records rather than their residence address. When DMV does that through an application process, we sort of jettison the residence address. It doesn't remain in our records. It's just the work address, again, for safety purposes. So how this works is when a county, right now Multnomah is the only one, has a local registration fee. DMB is the entity that collects that on behalf of the county. At the same time, we're collecting the state registration fee. Since that address in the individual's record shows Multnomah County, they're getting charged that local registration fee, even though a handful of people live outside the county. So it's a coming together of these statutes. The county registration statute has a list of exceptions. This isn't one of them, so there's no way to really do it without the small change in this bill. It's probably going to affect a few people, but it will allow them to pay the correct fee that by all rights they should be paying already. I will say that in the future, if a lot more counties come on board with a local reg fee or adjacent counties have this, it might be something that you or the counties will need to look at going forward. But for now, this is a great fix and something we can easily implement.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Joyce? Sounds quite simple.
Thank you
for your explanation. And I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 943. And I will move to Senate Bill 472 and open a work session. And again, ask Ms. Petrino to explain to us what we're looking at.
Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 472 would increase from 40,000 to 80,000 sets the number of Pacific Wonderland vehicle registration plates may be issued. It would also delete a provision that requires revenue from the sale of these plates to be allocated to the Capital Foundation.
Oh, did I? I'm sorry.
And require that currently requires monies to be used for establishing and maintaining an Oregon History Center at the Capitol or in the State Capitol Park.
Ms. Petrino, I need to make another adjustment. I believe I said work session again.
You did.
I did. And I'm going to ignore that and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 472.
Ready to go.
Sorry, it's Friday afternoon. It's been a very long week. My apologies. We have Ginny Lang who would like to come and speak to this issue. Thank you for being here in this public hearing. I have so many work sessions on my list today. I'm bound and determined to get to them very quickly.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ginny Lang, and I'm here today representing Fred Neal, who chairs the Oregon State Capitol Foundation, and the other members of the foundation on which I proudly serve as well. This bill comes to you from the Senate. Unanimous approval in the Business and Transportation Committee, the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, and on the Senate floor. The explanation is as simple as the bill. It allows another round of Pacific Wonderland license plate, the proceeds of which are evenly distributed to the Oregon Historical Society and the Oregon State Capitol Foundation. The minor change this time around is that instead of the Capitol Foundation using the money only for the History Gateway project, which we will also continue to work on, we would be able to use our portion of the money for other projects that the Capitol Foundation is also engaged in. So that would make the same kind of operating procedure as the Historical Society has in their use of their portion of the money. And we've worked with both Carrie Timchuk at the Historical Society and Senator Johnson, who was the initial sponsor of this bill, on that change. Everybody's fine with it. And as I said, comes to you unanimously from the Senate. So happy to answer any questions you might have and encourage you to support.
I just have a comment. The work that's done at the Oregon Historical Society and at the foundation that manages this beautiful structure in which we function every single day is greatly appreciated, and I hope you'll pass that along. I don't know if there are any questions on this bill.
Seems pretty simple.
No, but we're delighted to have you here to present it and
Thank you, Madam Chair, to have it in front of us today. Definitely pass those comments along. It's good to hear.
Mr. Timchuk hails from my district, so one of my neighbors. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to comment on Senate Bill 472 today? On that note, I will close this public hearing. And I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 694A. We have quite a few people who are, I believe, signed up to speak to this issue this afternoon. So, in fact, we have a very long list. I think what I would like to do is bring up panels of three, and I would like people to try and limit comments to about 3 minutes. It's going to take quite some time to get through the list, and I know we have a couple of presentations that will be actually on the screen. We have some videos, I think, that are going to be shown also. So I'm just going to go ahead and start calling up panels of three, and Ms. Petrino can manage the timer for us. But before we do that, Ms. Petrino, would you like to tell us a little bit about Senate Bill 694A that is before us now?
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 694 would allow the operator of a motorcycle or moped to travel between adjacent lanes of traffic traveling in the same direction under certain criteria, including that the highway has a designated speed of 50 miles per hour or greater, traffic is slowed to 10 miles per hour or less, and the motorcycle or moped operator drives in a cautious and prudent manner at a speed of 20 miles per hour or less. There is no revenue or fiscal impact.
Great, thank you. Let me take, I wonder, is Representative Wilson here this afternoon? I think I was expecting him to be here to testify, but I don't see him in the audience. All right. Then our first three panelists, let's call up Courtney Olive, Jim, I'm not, Broglio? Did I get it right? All right. And Christopher Slater, please. And you know what? I'm looking at my list, and I have a little asterisk that someone would like to make an intro, Paula Leslie. Should we begin with Paula? Would that be preferred for you all?
Just a short introduction.
Okay, that'd be great, Paula. Then we'll bring the other three up. Thank you. I'm sorry, I just noticed that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
For the record.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Paula Leslie. I'm the executive director for Bike Pack of Oregon. Bike Pack of Oregon represents the Bait of Oregon and Oregon's motorcycle riders. We bring this bill, or we requested Senate Bill 694 to be drafted to make Oregon's motorcycle riders just a little bit safer. As you mentioned, Representative McLean, I'm sorry.
Ms. Petrino.
Petrino, mm-hmm. Thank you. Traffic would have to be stopped or moving no faster than 10 miles an hour, allowing a motorcycle rider to go 20 miles an hour, so that's school zone speed. While this bill was over in the Senate, senators and ODOT had some concerns that were addressed with the Dash 1 amendment, concerns that were also addressed in this committee with a similar bill and introduced House Bill 2512, allowing motorcycle riders to use the shoulder during traffic jams and slowdowns. Some of these concerns were things like three-wheeled motorcycles not having appropriate clearance, motorcycles moving in front of the line at traffic lights, speed restrictions for traffic and motorcycles, shoulder debris, construction cones, and areas where the shoulder was non-existent altogether. Other things were liability concerns and basic rider safety. So with the Dash 1 amendment, there was a restriction made for two-wheeled motorcycles, and we specified two or more adjacent lanes on the highway. So cars had to be moving in the same direction, so there wouldn't be any of this traffic moving in opposite directions with the motorcycle in the middle. And then also with a restriction of highways where the speed limit is set at 50 miles an hour or more. So that takes it out of cities and towns, pedestrians, and we won't be dealing with the bike lanes and things. We bring this bill to you with a unanimous vote from the Judiciary Committee over there in the Senate, and then also with a two-thirds majority vote in the floor. And Senator Jenny Burdick said, and I quote, "I've never opposed a bill so much and then turned around to support it. This is a really good bill." We bring this bill to you with a lot of research and careful consideration and planning, and we urge the committee to envision being on a motorcycle seat just for a little while you listen to the testimony today. And I know some of you probably aren't riders, but if you could just kind of take yourself out of your normal car situation and just kind of put yourself there for a moment as you listen to the testimony. I'm not only here as executive director of Bike Pack, but also as a new rider. And I can tell you that after 2 months of riding, I decided to take a trip up to Portland on I-5 to go visit my daughter. And I thought, well, I'll just wear high-vis gear and be really careful and stay out of people's way. And as I got closer to Portland, the traffic started to do this stop and go, 65 miles an hour and a stop, 65 miles an hour and stop. And then I'm keeping an eye on the guy in my mirror, and every time we stop, he's getting closer and closer, and I'm doing what I can to have him back off. And on the last time we stopped, I see the cars in front of me kind of open up, and I see that there's a spot. And so I take the spot, because as I'm looking in the mirror, I notice the guy is just right behind me. And so I went between the cars, and he slammed into the car in front of me. And that's the reason why I'm here today. So
great.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for letting us bring this bill forward. We really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And again, the next panel, Courtney Olive, Jim Broglio, and Christopher Slater, please. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here this afternoon. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Courtney Olive, and I am a resident of Portland in District 43. And I'm a former member of the Governor's Advisory Committee for Motorcycle Safety. I serve as a volunteer and appointed by the governor on that committee for 5 years, and stepped down in 2013 when I had a two-year-old son. Or now he's 2 years old. What we're here to talk about today is basically two things on 694. And I have a presentation that's going to cover these two topics and is going to share with you and very important studies and data that reflect the facts about motorcycle lane sharing and lane filtering. And as you heard the quote from Senator Burdick in the Senate committee, what we're finding is, as the legislators really look into this topic, the more they learn about it, the more they realize that this has two-pronged benefits: reduces traffic congestion and improves motorcycle safety. So what is lane filtering? So here's a photograph. Picture speaks 1,000 words. This is in California, where it's legal. And you'll see that the motorcycle is proceeding up between lanes of cars. And I sort of think of it in terms of almost creating a temporary HOV lane, if you will, so that in gridlock situations, all of this unused sort of fallow space in the road is now usable to move vehicles, motorcycles, or scooters forward. And here we see an example in Europe where motorcycle filtering and lane splitting has been practiced for decades. And this is obviously an urban environment at some sort of rush hour time, and you have a high number of motorcycles riding, probably higher than you would see anywhere in the United States. But that's just sort of a function of the area. And so when we talk about congestion relief, just why is it that, how is it that this works, that motorcycle lane filtering actually gets us all there faster? Well, if you think about an ordinary line of traffic and cars in an ordinary line of traffic, and you think about how much space a car takes up, and then you look at this photograph and see this is an example from Asia where, again, motorcycle filtering and lane splitting is universally legal. You see 5, 6, 7 motorcycles in the space that one car would occupy. So that's essentially what we're talking about here. We're talking about, if you will, picture an ordinary line of traffic, and if you remove a motorcycle from the space of a car, that shortens the line. That's one less vehicle in line. So the result is everybody gets there faster. And this goes beyond common sense. This has also been proven by traffic engineers in Europe. In 2011 in Belgium, a study was done and found that if 10% of the cars were to switch to motorcycles and lane filter, the total time loss for all vehicles would decrease by 40%. So a thing to bear in mind is there are 250,000 registered motorcyclists in Oregon. So if we could have a way that would incentivize them to ride their motorcycles, we could really see some impacts on congestion relief here. Of course, emissions would fall as well, and all the other things that go with that. You're encouraging more fuel-efficient vehicles. Motorcycles commonly get 40 miles to the gallon. Scooters can deliver up to 80 to 100, and less wear and tear on your roads. It's really a better use of infrastructure. I want to talk some about the safety issue, and I'll beg your indulgence, Madam Chair, but I really am here to be the person that speaks to the safety issue of this bill. So I'm going to go through just three key documents on that with you. So Every study that has been done on the practice of lane sharing and lane filtering concludes that at a bare minimum, it is no more dangerous than riding a motorcycle just ordinarily would be. It does not increase the danger of motorcycling. And in fact, the most recent comprehensive study on this from the state of California finds that it increases the safety of motorcycling. There's not a single study to the contrary. Zero. I think what happens a lot of times is when people are unfamiliar with the topic, they're a little unsure about it. There's a little bit of concern. That's natural to have a little hesitation. But in this case, that concern and hesitation is not backed by any evidence. So the three key studies I'll walk you through very quickly. The California study. This was released just last fall. This is the largest motorcycle accident study that has ever been done in the United States. It collected data from roughly 8,000 accidents. And it was done by a very rigorous and reliable group of folks. California Office of Traffic Safety commissioned the study. California Highway Patrol collected the data from the accidents. And the University of Berkeley analyzed the data and performed the analysis that led to the study. And what you'll see here from the spokesman for the California Office of Traffic Safety about the study is, what we learned is if you lane split, it's no more dangerous than motorcycling in any other circumstance. And in fact, the study went further. It found that motorcyclists who lane filter were, quote, notably less likely to suffer serious injuries and fatalities. And they looked at what speeds motorcycles were lane filtering and found that even at speeds up to 30 miles per hour, you attain this noticeable safety benefit. Now, bear in mind, 694A is dealing with even lower speeds. The fastest a motorcycle could travel is 20 miles an hour. So, implication is probably an even safer, more conservative speed. These are the injury reductions that the study found. They found that head injuries, the blue columns are motorcyclists who were lane splitting, the red columns are motorcyclists who were riding in the ordinary flow of traffic. So head injuries, they found that they were about, 9% versus 16.5% for those who were not lane splitting.
Did they require helmets in California?
Yes, they do. California is a required helmet state. Next category of injuries, torso injuries. Found that motorcyclists who were lane splitting had 18.6, those who were not, 27.3. And here's the biggie, fatal injuries. Motorcycles who were lane splitting had 1.4%, and those who were not lane splitting had over twice the rate of fatal injuries that the motorcyclists did, that the lane splitting motorcyclists did. A final note on the California study. This study was released on August 6th of 2014. The study describes itself as a preliminary analysis. The study is forthcoming in a final version. I'm told by officials in California as soon as next week it may be out. I've had numerous conversations with the California Office of Traffic Safety. I've also spoken with the author of the study, Dr. Thomas Rice. And what I am told about the final study is that the purpose of that final study is not a revisitation of any substantive changes to this preliminary analysis. Rather, it's a further addition of some demographic information, mm-hmm. Rider age, gender, type of motorcycle, roadway characteristics, things like that.
So we'd appreciate it if you
yes, ma'am.
Get to the end. Thank you.
All right. So the final study will be forthcoming, and we'll certainly provide that to you the day that it comes out.
We would appreciate that.
So the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has also noted that lane splitting can reduce crash frequency. And this was all the way back in the year 2000. At that time, they called for more study. This has been done now by the California study. It's also been done by the European Union, finding that lane sharing is only accounted for in 0.5% or maybe up to 5% of motorcycle crashes is a factor. Okay, as to reasons why lane filtering is safe, I'm going to skip through this in the interest of time, and I'm going to point you to
one. We have this on OLIS, correct? Do we
yes.
need them? Okay, we have this available to us.
Okay, I'm going to point you to one person's testimony, and that is Mr. Steve Guderian. It's been submitted in writing. Mr. Guderian is a lifetime law enforcement officer from California and a traffic reconstruction expert. Has also worked for NHTSA, and he explains in very short detail in the first three pages of his testimony how lane filtering is safe from a crash dynamic standpoint and why it increases safety. Last two points I'm going to make are on common myths of lane sharing. Myth one, that lane changes or door openings may cause accidents. We've got to bear in mind how slow this bill is, the speeds we're talking about here. We're talking about school zone speeds. Cars are going to be moving at 10 miles an hour, so your lane changes are going to be at a snail's pace. And if a door opens, there'll be ample time for a motorcycle to stop. Let's see. Other reasons why they're safe. Last thing I'll mention is the last myth, motorcycles may not fit in lane filtering. NHTSA itself has dispelled this myth by saying a motorcycle's narrow width can allow it to pass between lanes. And here we have a chart that demonstrates average lane width of 12 feet, average car width, and the amount of space that you have for a narrow motorcycle to fit. So in conclusion, we very much ask for your support and a do pass recommendation on this bill that will ease congestion, increase motorcycle safety, and it won't cost the state a thing. Thank you.
Very nicely done. Thank you. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. My name is Jim Berlio. I am a longtime rider. I'm a daily commuter. I've been rear-ended three times in traffic. Once on the freeway, sitting in traffic, and an inattentive driver pinched me between himself and the car in front of me. Totaled my motorcycle, put me in the hospital. I've had it happen twice on off-ramps. Sitting in traffic again, parked there totally legally, and inattentive people on their cell phones, what have you, I end up sandwiched in between. My strategy now is I use that available space. More than once over the years, I hear tires behind me, and I shoot between the lanes of traffic, and they stop where I was, or they pound into the car that was in front of me. I'm a believer. I wouldn't be here if I hadn't adopted these strategies. So yeah, I am very convinced with my own experiences that it is safer, and the speeds are easily handled. We're not going fast enough to not be able to avoid somebody else moving around. Yeah. That's pretty much where I'm at with it.
Thank you
for your time.
We'll hear the full panel and then open for questions. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christopher Slater. I'm a motorcyclist and an attorney that represents injured motorcyclists in the states of Oregon and Washington. I've been riding since 1985, and I've been licensed to practice law in the state of Oregon since 1997. You don't need me to tell you, the Transportation Committee on Transportation and Economic Development, the infrastructure and transportation challenges that our state of Oregon is facing. Those of you that have commuted in the Portland metro area are very aware of the traffic problems we have up there. And the recent study came out that placed Portland, the metro area, as number 10 in terms of the most traffic-congested metropolitan area in the United States. So I'm not here to tell you that lane filtering or lane splitting, however the term is that you'd like to use it, is the solution to our traffic problems. However, it is a piece of the puzzle to the solution. And I think that given our transportation infrastructure problems, we need an all-of-the-above strategy. We cannot afford to be discounting partial solutions when we have such a compelling challenge ahead of us. So lane filtering, as Mr. Olive demonstrated to you through the data, 10% of the drivers change to motorcycles and lane filtered. This European study shows that the traffic delays by commuters would be reduced by 40% across the board. So I can tell you there are over 250,000 licensed motorcyclists in the state of Oregon. If you commute during rush hour traffic, you would be surprised by that. And the reason is we have motorcyclists today that leave their motorcycles in the garage, and they take their SUV, they take their car, and they join everyone else in causing more congestion on our highways. So by allowing lane filtering, what you're doing is you're incentivizing the use of alternative vehicles. You're allowing motorcycles to, number one, be able to filter through stop-and-go traffic during rush hour, and you're also providing a safety incentive. And we have a remarkable comparison for us that's already a success story in our state, and that's bicycles. In the city of Portland now, we have incentivized the use of bicycles. I want you to imagine what our traffic would be like without what we did 20 years ago to incentivize the use of bicycles. And so it does work. Over time, we will see more and more people utilizing motorcycles to commute. The issue that drives my concern, both as an attorney, as a rider, is the safety issue. And I wanted to just address a couple of key facts. Number one, nationally in the state of Oregon is approximately the same. We have rear-end accidents are 40% of all accidents in the United States. It's about 37% in Oregon. Oregon 217, one of our most congestive arterials in the Portland metro area, has 200 accidents a year. 70% of those are rear-end accidents. And our concern is that pinch point accidents, which are when a motorcycle gets caught between two cars, result in serious injuries to the riders. The other issue is the blind spot, which is the blind spot exists in the lane next to you, not in between lanes. And if you look in your side view mirror the next time you're driving, you're going to see a dotted line all the way behind you. There is no blind spot between the lanes. So contrary to myth, allowing motorcycles to filter during those congested stop-and-go times actually places the motorcycle in a more visible position. I want to address a couple. I know the time is limited. I want to address the submission by the Oregon Department of Transportation before the Senate. I have not seen their submission before this committee. And there's a couple of issues I wanted to address. They purported a number of rear-end accidents as in terms of minimizing the number of accidents that occur that would be applicable to the bill. And this is a very cautious bill. We're limiting it to 50-mile-per-hour roads or less. These are going to be interstate and highways. And they reported a number of incidents. I believe the number was 14 over the last 8 to 10 years and only 22 injuries. I requested and received a copy of the report, and I want the committee to note that the report is limited to interstates only. It does not include the majority of roads that this bill would cover, which is state highways, where the speed limits is 50 miles per hour or greater. It also is limited to situations in which the motorcycle was actually stopped. Okay, so rear-end accidents happen when both vehicles are moving. In addition, the evidence shows that this bill would reduce the severity of the injuries to riders in all accident situations on those roadways. So, hold on a second. The other issue I wanted to address was, and on the injury, I have a quantitative issue with the ODOT report that's at least in their testimony before the Senate. I have a qualitative issue, which is when we talk about injuries to motorcyclists, we're talking about serious injuries. Just 2 weeks ago up in Vancouver, we had two motorcyclists that were both taken out by a car that rear-ended them both. Both of them went to the hospital. So there are no minor incidents involving motorcycles. So even when we talk, now whatever the quantitative number is, we're talking about serious injuries to Oregonians that can be prevented by this bill. I've also been asked in speaking to representatives and senators about the liability issue. As a motorcycle accident attorney, I will quickly address that, which is this bill does nothing to change the respective responsibilities that drivers and motorcyclists have to each other. If a motorcycle is riding in between the lanes beyond the guidelines, I think there'll be probably a presumption of liability on the motorcyclist. If a car is changing lanes without checking their mirror or texting while they're changing lanes, there's probably going to be a presumption of fault against the driver. So in conclusion, I think this is a piece of the puzzle in terms of the solution to our transportation problems. We're talking about school zone speeds here. And this is, I think, a least intrusive step to help reduce congestion for everyone, reduces the infrastructure strain, and provides a significant safety benefit. And I urge your recommendation of passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. And if you don't mind, we'll open up to questions for this panel.
I have one, I guess.
Representative McLean, please.
You've talked a lot about California, and I know that in California they evidently have lane sharing, and then this is lane filtering. When you were talking about some of your reports, were the reports on sharing or filtering or both?
Sure. So I'll see if I can take a stab at that. So The distinction in terms is not always agreed upon. They can sometimes be sort of synonymous. Mm-hmm. We've been calling this filtering and thinking of it as filtering because it is at such lower speeds than what California allows. So lane sharing, lane splitting, lane filtering, they're really often used the same. But for us, we've been using more of the European term filtering because it really is a lower speed situation than what California's law allows.
Can I just add a very small bit to that answer? The study, California study, I think it's notable. There are no speed restrictions in the state of California. There's no law regulating
lane
splitting.
Nothing on the
books. Nothing. It's the Wild West out there.
It's not addressed.
But even without any speed restrictions whatsoever, you saw the injury reductions. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about low-speed filtering, we're talking about a more significant injury reduction in my estimation.
And I have to comment, I've spent some time in Taiwan and have seen the hordes of mopeds and motorcycles. I mean, it is stunning.
School
absolutely
fish.
Stunning, yes. At the front of all the stoplights, it's very entertaining, actually. Any other questions for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think what I would like to do now is call up, let's do our second panel. Tim Evinger, Cynthia Strauss, and Brian Edwards, please. Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Jack.
Hi, my name is Tim Evinger. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and
Good
committee.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Tim Evinger, I'm retired sheriff of Klamath County, retired 2 years ago, 24 years in law enforcement. I was also a motor officer trained by the Oregon State Police when they had motors in the 1990s and also became a motor instructor during the 1990s and trained dozens of motor officers across the state. My background is that I continue to ride today in retirement. My wife also is a new rider. And so this while I'm from Klamath County, this doesn't have a huge effect on traffic. Our traffic jams are usually cattle drives or something similar. But
which we all appreciate.
So it looks a little different, but this makes complete sense for safety, in my opinion. I want to talk a little bit about the law enforcement pieces of this. And in my opinion, it does not change anything significantly about enforcement, that there's already laws on the books that people could break now that would have to be enforced in a similar manner. And if somebody wants to get away from the police on a motorcycle, they can get away from the police now without a lane filtering law or lane sharing law. It also does not negate or change anything to do with unsafe lane changes, that it doesn't offer an asylum for motorcyclists making unsafe lane changes. Law enforcement also has the ability to cite for careless driving, and that law specifies that the operator must drive in a cautious and prudent manner when doing lane filtering. And when you're utilizing the space between the vehicles, you've already heard that it's a 10 mile an hour issue. What I have to tell you is that 10 miles an hour is the speed that allows you to maneuver, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well, that a motorcyclist is not maneuverable standing still by the law of physics. Law enforcement also has speed measurement equipments, and they're also very adept at estimating speed, that when you're looking at business zones and school zones across the state, the designated speed is 20 miles per hour. And law enforcement is able to estimate speed, but they also have speed measuring equipment, whether it's laser, radar, or pacing. And then, of course, it doesn't change anything to eluding a stop for enforcement. And whether an individual is operating a motorcycle today or after this law change occurs, if the operator has disregard for the law, it doesn't change anything about that. So the same enforcement issues live on. I want to point out that the motorcyclists have the most to lose in this, that they're the ones that would be Anytime you have the rule of lug nuts and you have one lug nut on each wheel compared to multiple lug nuts on another wheel, that's usually the law of lug nuts, that's who's going to get hurt the worst is the fewest lug nuts. And we've always used that in law enforcement, that's who usually wins. So motorcyclists have the most to lose, and why wouldn't they be prudent and cautious if that's the type of rider they are, which most riders are. I wanted to add that the bill does not encourage motorcyclists to squeeze between cars, and you saw that there's 6 feet or more between cars. And the other thing is there may need to be a little bit of education with this. And when I say that things have to be done properly, cautious, and prudent, that means that you do not it is not intended to be going between cars when they're offset, when they can make a lane change. The safest time is when they're side by side or have some offset where they can't change lanes. That's the time to go through, and of course if the mirrors aren't lined up. And so it may take a little education for motorcyclists as well. So again, this law does proceed cautiously. There are tens of thousands of miles of city streets, county roads, highways throughout the state that could benefit from this at one time or another. But 15 miles an hour to zero is a big speed differential for it to have a vehicle coming up behind you. And it is important that we give motorcyclists and scooter riders the ability to use the lane to escape. You heard a couple of testimonies about individuals who use that already to escape, and it makes complete sense to me to use that space. So in closing, motorcycles and mopeds are maneuverable, but that's when they're moving. Part of the safety system of these two-wheeled vehicles is the maneuverability of them for collision avoidance. We should be encouraging them to use this safety feature. Lane sharing, filtering, or splitting, or whatever we're calling it, is using this maneuverability. Oregon is a progressive and innovative state. Transportation is no exception. Whether it's bicycles, motorcyclists, implements of husbandry, commercial trucks, or passenger cars, we need to continue to find ways to safely share the road and keep Oregon moving. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for giving us the time to speak today. My name is Cynthia C.J. Strauss, and I'm a rider who began riding when I was in school because taking a scooter to school was a lot cheaper for parking passes and gas, and the whole 80 miles a gallon thing was awesome. And years later, I'm an avid motorcyclist, and I ride between 10,000 and 12,000 miles a year and love it. Presently, I'm working in Lake Oswego in Clackamas County, and I reside in Beaverton. And so Highway 217 is my primary commute pattern. And I'm fortunate enough that I do also have an SUV, so I can, if I need to, leave the bike in the garage and take the car. And I guess talking as a commuter, you know, everybody who's commuting has to think about a lot of things. You know, do I have gas in the car, and did I pack my lunch? And we riders have to take a lot more things into consideration when we're leaving in the morning, and that is, what's the weather going to be like, which is a big deal on a bike, and in the other seasons, is it going to be dark when I'm coming home? And I think this matters because in terms of risk factors, the dark and the rain and rush hour traffic, these get calculated as risk factors for me. So if it's at that point where I know it's going to be rush hour when I leave, it is going to be dark and it's going to be raining, I'm going to take my SUV, because I don't know if you've been on Highway 217, but stop and go rush hour, I don't mind waiting my turn. Like, I don't need to share lanes because I'm impatient or I don't want to give everybody a fair chance. But I have seen so many fender benders, and there's no such thing as a fender bender on a bike. You know, if somebody touches the rear of my bike, I'm going to be on the ground and I'm not going to be able to pick it up. I wanted to give you a commuter perspective on what it's like when we take these bikes out there on the highways. And if SB 694A is able to pass, this can be the tipping point, I think, for those of us who are deciding, should I take the bike or the car today? Because if I know it's going to be rush hour, I can handle the dark and the rain, but I can't handle people lurching and going and lurching and going and maybe not paying attention. So I think that being able to share a lane when things get unsafe or there are too many cars around will affect commuters' decision-making on what vehicle to take that day. And I think that's the important part of what I had to say. There's some more in my written testimony, but I feel like the people who have already been hit on their bikes from the rear pretty much conveyed the significance of that. And
thank you.
Just thank you for your time and hearing us today.
We have a number of written testimony submissions on OLIS that we all have available to us, too. And if yours is here, we'll certainly be available for us to take a look at. So.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being here. Yes, sir. Welcome.
Good evening. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and rest of the committee. My name is Brian Edwards. I am a former Team Oregon safety instructor, and I'm also a public relations professional. I've lived in Oregon for 20-plus years. Some of my clients are big companies in Oregon, including Tektronix and ESI. And I'll address why I bring up my public relations background in a little bit. And then I also grew up in California, and so I have tremendous experience lane splitting. I had a very long commute, 45 miles each way in California, and lane splitting being legal, I pretty much commuted every day on that commute on my motorcycle. It saved me a tremendous amount of time. And over the course, I did about 60,000 miles, and I never once had any issues. So I didn't see any issues. I never had any close calls. I just felt like it was a safe thing to do. So that's why I'm pretty passionate about lane splitting, because I know it works. So I wanted to just briefly address in my presentation here the concept of an escape route. So this is a concept that is taught by Team Oregon instructors to the students, you know, new beginning riders, is that you always want to maintain a cushion between you and the other vehicles around you. And at the same time, always be scanning for an escape route. Unfortunately, in really dense traffic situations, you don't have a space cushion. You are surrounded by cars on all sides, behind you, in front of you, on either side of you. So, and then, as this illustration shows, you basically have no escape route. You can't go to the left, you can't go to the right, you can't go forward, you can't go back. You're trapped. So basically, what you teach your students is, well, you know, check your mirrors, slow down a little bit, try to make room, watch what the cars around you are doing. Good luck. And that's basically what we're forced to teach them. So if SB 694A passes, we could then have the ability, Team Oregon instructors would then have the ability to teach students. There's also another avenue. If you have to take advantage of it, you could go between cars. That gives you an escape route that did not exist before. So, you know, I have complete confidence in Team Oregon. I think it's probably the best motorcycle safety instruction program in the country. I think it's been rated number one. They have some really top-notch, world-class instructors who are very passionate. They would be able to teach their students how to do this in a very safe manner. So, you know, I just think that it's very consistent with the philosophies, and it would take very minimal changes to the overall program at Team Oregon. So, Then switching gears a little bit, one of the, you know, questions that has come up in the Senate and other places is, you know, what's the public going to think? What will drivers think when cars come by them? And their initial reaction, of course, is motorcycles are going to come flying by me. I can see those maniacs on their crotch rockets ripping by me. That's not what this bill is. It's school zone speeds really slow. And so we worked with the media to get coverage like this. Following the passage of SB 694 from the Senate, which is motorcycle bill, it's safe. They explain the requirements, slow speeds, no more than 20 miles an hour. Traffic has to be stopped. As you see in the COIN coverage, they talked about it, 50 mile an hour highways, 10 miles and less traffic, motorcycle 20 miles an hour. So the media was very effective conveying that this is not lane splitting like California model. This is a safe model. And so when people see that, when they see this type of coverage and they hear it factually presented in a rational way, they respond favorably. And so the Oregonian conducted an online reader poll, and 78.2% were in favor of it. So the overwhelming majority of readers of the Oregonian are in favor of SB 694 when they look at it in terms of It's going to thin congestion, make life better for them, makes things safer for motorcycles, goes a long way to reduce greenhouse gases. So huge benefit overall to the general public and to motorcyclists. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's a state in Australia called New South Wales, and they legalized lane filtering in July of 2014, primarily because they have very severe congestion problems, probably similar to ours. Their bill is similar to this bill, 18 miles an hour. And I just wanted to show a quick example of the news coverage that resulted.
Okay. And
when
then
that
I'll
was
need
passed.
To ask you to move
yeah.
along, sir.
So
thank
I
you.
Can just play it right now.
Okay. And, we're way over time here.
What if you could cut congestion on our busiest roads with the stroke of a pen and it didn't cost a cent? Well, that's what the state government claims it's doing, with new road rules set to ease traffic in the city and on our busiest motorways, including the M4 and M5.
In the eternal battle against bad traffic, there's finally a cheap and common sense way to get things moving.
It's a win for the motorcyclists and it's a win for cars as well.
And it simply involves a bit of sharing.
Lane filtering is defined as motorcycles moving between lanes of slow or stationary traffic.
New South Wales is the first state to make lane filtering legal after a successful trial in the CBD last March and April.
If there's congestion or they're approaching a traffic light and traffic is under 30 kilometres an hour, they will be able to use lane filtering.
Under the new rules, there'll be a speed limit of 30 kilometres an hour. Lane filtering won't be allowed in school zones and it can only be used by fully licensed riders and only when it's safe.
To make things better for everyone, riders won't be able to do whatever they want. They can't weave in between trucks and buses or even try and lane filter on the inside right next to the footpath.
It's certainly going to reduce congestion on some of the larger motorways and the smaller CBD streets in and around the city.
Labor wanted the changes brought in at the start of the year.
We're choking in congestion. Now, this is just one measure, one step. In opposition, they promised to fix it, but in government, it's taken them a long time to act.
The new rules take effect from the 1st of July. Kevin Wilde, Nine News.
So, just to summarize real quickly, I think the time is right for SB 694A. Our traffic problems are getting worse. This will improve safety. It's supported by the general public based on the survey of the Oregonian. And the last point I wanted to make that I don't have much time, I realize that, but myself and other people in the motorcycling community will work very, very hard to educate riders and drivers about what this bill entails and what safe lane filtering is all about.
Thank you.
So thank you for your time.
And I want to compliment Team Oregon. I have a number of friends and some family members who've taken advantage of their training, and they do a fine job.
Yep.
And I wanted to acknowledge the great work that they do and appreciate the time that they spend making sure that our riders are safe. So thank you.
You bet.
Questions for this panel?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay. Let's move on to Brett Barnum and Chris Henry, please. Welcome. Thank you for being here this afternoon. In any order you choose.
Madam Chair McKeown and members of the committee, my name is Chris Henry. I'm from Eugene, Oregon. I'm a volunteer member of the Governor's Advisory Committee on Motorcycle Safety and representing the committee today. I'm also a licensed professional engineer in the state of Oregon and an avid motorcycling enthusiast with over 30 years of riding experience, including extensive motorcycle safety training. I'm speaking in opposition to Senate Bill 694A. Thank you for this opportunity. The Motorcycle Safety Committee advises the governor and the governor's highway safety representative on matters of safety for motorcyclists in Oregon, including legislation. It's fair to say that there is a lot of interest by people who ride motorcycles in lane splitting, lane filtering, and lane sharing. That interest covers many issues and many opinions, some of which you've heard regarding those issues. As the Motorcycle Safety Committee's focus is on safety, safety is the lens through which we must evaluate Senate Bill 694A. Just as within the community of people that ride motorcycles, the committee members express differences in opinion, but in the end voted to oppose Senate Bill 694A, as it does not serve the safety interests of people riding motorcycles or others traveling on our roads in Oregon. The Motorcycle Safety Committee received data related to Oregon motorcyclist rear-end crashes mimicking the roadways covered in Senate Bill 694A. Over 8 years, there were 14 crashes, resulting in zero fatalities and 21 injuries. That's approximately 1.5 rear-end crashes per year. Allowing lane splitting in Oregon would trade a relatively low risk of being rear-ended for a much higher likelihood of crashes where people riding motorcycles strike other motor vehicles on our roads. As we hear from our liaisons in motorcycle training at Team Oregon, lane splitting is an activity that is counter to the practice being taught to new and experienced riders that recommend keeping the rider's options open to avoid road hazards and maintaining a safe space cushion from other vehicles on the road. Lane splitting reduces a rider's maneuverability options and reduces their safety space cushion. From this perspective, lane splitting increases the safety risk to both people riding motorcycles and the traveling public. Our liaisons in law enforcement will speak to their concerns that they shared about the difficulty to monitor and enforce, so I will not repeat them. Riding a motorcycle is a risky activity. Our review of fatal crashes involving people riding motorcycles reveals a pattern of misjudging risk with tragic results. Those that would choose to lane split if it were allowed would be accepting a higher risk of a collision. We are concerned that those riders would exceed the speed limits and conditions proposed for lane splitting and further increase the risk to themselves and others. The best safety outcome for people riding motorcycles and others traveling on our roads is to oppose Senate Bill 694A and not allow lane splitting in the state of Oregon. Thank you, and I look forward to your questions and discussion.
Thank you, sir. Officer Barnum, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. My name is Brett Barnum. I'm a motorcycle sergeant with the Traffic Division for the Portland Police Bureau, a 30-year motorcycle rider in the state of Oregon, and a police motorcycle trainer since 2002. I have 24 years worth of law enforcement experience in the state of Oregon, and I'm here today to present the Portland Police Bureau's opposition to Senate Bill 694A and respectfully request a no vote from the members of this committee. As you know, the purpose of this bill is to change Oregon Revised Statute 814.240, which will allow two-wheeled motorcyclists in Oregon the ability to pass within or between lanes of travel under certain circumstances. The Portland Police Bureau's opposition to the Senate bill takes into account a variety of different public safety issues. The amount of injury, crashes, and property damage as a result of allowing motorcyclists the ability to drive between vehicles would most certainly rise dramatically. This type of law would also certainly increase the amount of hit-and-run crashes to innocent motorists who would be unable to hold an at-fault driver accountable for the damage they caused, as motorcyclists would have the opportunity to continue on through the lanes of travel and flee the scene. Keep in mind, those in favor of this bill have mentioned this type of revision is for the safety of motorcyclists when traffic begins to slow or stop in front of them. Motorcyclists are concerned about being hit from behind by other vehicles, and thus one claim is that it is safer for motorcyclists to have the ability to drive between lanes to avoid these types of collisions. The Portland Police Bureau completely understands this, and it understands this is a safety issue, and would remind everyone that it is not a violation of law to go ahead and drive between the lanes of vehicle in order to place yourself in a position of safety. To place yourself in that position of safety, congested traffic, where congested traffic would be in front of you if vehicles were not stopping behind you. You simply just would not be allowed to continue driving between cars after you positioned yourself in that place of safety. I've had the chance to review some crash data provided to me through the Oregon Department of Transportation surrounding the rear-end motorcycle collisions. This data was over a recent 9-year period. And even with this law in place, the crash data shows this to be an extremely low safety risk. and that's in the Portland metro area, and even lower throughout the whole state as a whole. Lastly, if this type of revision were to occur, law enforcement's ability to enforce this type of law would be completely ineffective. In essence, there would be little or no enforcement to this new addition. During times of congested traffic, it would be extremely difficult for police officers to be able to quantify a motorcyclist's speed using a laser or a radar speed measuring device. These types of devices work best when there are lower volumes of traffic to obtain the verified speed readings, which judges need. Certainly, law enforcement will not be splitting lanes at greater than 20 miles an hour to follow potential violators in order to pace somebody's speed or apprehend a traffic violator. This is just too dangerous. Even when responding to crashes or other police calls upon a congested roadway where traffic is slowed or at a standstill, police motorcycle operators rarely travel at over 10 miles an hour between vehicles to reach the problem upon the roadway. And moreover, it'd be an absolute last resort for the police to drive in between vehicles instead of using the emergency shoulder of the road. In summary, the Portland Police Bureau feels this type of revision will only increase safety concerns rather than reducing the safety risk for all forms of motoring transportation upon our roadways. Furthermore, the impacted geographical area of which this law would be utilized is so relatively small, and for such a short duration in the morning and evening rush hour commutes, the overall risk to the motoring public simply just does not outweigh the benefit to this type of legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, Sergeant Burnham. I'm sorry I called you officer.
That's fine.
Sergeant.
I've been called worse.
Questions for this panel from the committee?
I guess I have one.
Representative McClain.
Madam Chair, thank you. When you're talking about the safety issues, are you talking about safety issues for the motorcycle only, the cars on the road only, both?
Madam Chair and Representative McClain, mm-hmm. I'm actually talking about both. If you've ever been the victim of a crash, mm-hmm. You're traumatized. And whether it's a low-speed crash or a high-speed crash, it's startling. And generally, people get the shakes because they're nervous, because something happened. The impacts financially to the motorist because of somebody else's inability to ride the motorcycle correctly through lanes is something to keep in mind. But the safety aspect of it, it won't take much, and especially at lower speeds as this bill is designed, it won't take much to knock a motorcyclist off their path of travel if they hit a side view mirror. Not to mention, if somebody hits a side view mirror, we're talking probably somewhere in the area of, if you have just a standard Honda, you're talking $300 worth of repair to that side view mirror, plus any paint damage, which is going to inflate the cost of your repair. So the safety issue is simply out there for both the motorcyclist and the motorist. And so by allowing this to happen, you create that safety issue for both, as well as a civil and financial impact for both.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Sir.
Representative Lively.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And either one can try to answer this. As I read this bill, I'm trying to understand the situations and where this would become necessary in the eyes of the rider. So they're talking about on roads that have speed limits of 50 miles an hour or higher, which obviously isn't in downtown Eugene or Springfield or Portland, and that the traffic is slowing down or stopping because there's something that is impeding the traffic at that point. So I'm trying to understand that, if there's some difference there, if we're just talking about standard riders and especially people in the cities and that, and the fact that all of the traffic is slowing or stopping at that point versus moving along or just traffic has been moving along at 20 miles an hour. I'm just trying to understand if there's some distinction there based on it, because it's not, I mean, it's pretty limited circumstances, not so limited in metro areas, limited circumstances under which, so everybody's slowing down because they're seeing things happening. If that changes any of these things you're talking about from the standpoint of potential risk versus the fact that the traffic is just moving and people are splitting the lanes or moving the lanes.
Madam Chair, Representative
yes.
Lively, members of the committee, in our discussion on motorcycle safety committee, we talked about the difficulty that riders may experience monitoring their speed and the speed of the traffic around them. Mm-hmm. The focus should be on the road ahead and where the risk presents itself, and not necessarily on the speedometer out of taking your eyes off of the risk. And so that was, again, a concern of, well, how could you practicably apply this technique and within the law? And that's part of the concern, is staying within the law as well.
Thank you. Mr. Henry, it might be helpful, I believe, and not to put you on the spot, that the commission on the Senate side had a different position on the bill, the governor's commission on safety. And it might be helpful for us to understand that something did change as the bill moved from the Senate to the House. Would you mind commenting on that?
Well, one thing that changed is there was Madam Chair and members of the committee. There were the Dash 1 amendments added to the bill, which caused the committee to revisit and reconsider their position. We also heard from our liaisons and the training from Team Oregon that also advise the committee, and the committee provides review of their training materials as well. So we heard from them about the safety concerns, how, as I said earlier, about the keeping one's options open to avoid risk and providing the safe space cushion, and being in a smaller area reduces the space cushion, limits the number of options of where one can go. We also heard from our law enforcement liaisons with similar to the testimony that you heard today, that affected the members on the committee and in some cases changed the vote of members of the committee. And so that's why you see a change.
I appreciate the clarification, and I primarily wanted to do that. We have some members missing today who will be watching this testimony at a later date, and I thought it might be helpful for them to understand that something had occurred in the middle of the building, in essence, as the bill moved, and I thought that might be helpful. Representative McLean.
Well, to the points that you folks just made, one of the comments that Sergeant made, was that basically if there's a danger, that the very thing that the training says is go there. Go there. That's where they should go. They should go out to where there's safety or there's more sight line or something. And so it seems like that's what they train them to do. And you've said that's not illegal. And so what we're gaining from this is basically that we would be trying to change patterns of safety for a longer period of time, it seems like. If it's legal for them to do it if they're unsafe, and they feel like staying there in that stopped position is unsafe, and they're trying to get themselves out of that 10-mile-an-hour traffic, so they're trying to get themselves out of what they consider to be not safe, I just don't understand quite the issue, because it's all about safety, right?
It is.
And it's all about making sure that they have choices to make where they have these avenues to get themselves out of harm's way. And if they're saying that being in that slowed down position for whatever reason, for longer periods of time, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, is going to make it still dangerous, then what are we doing? I don't understand that if you're telling them to do it when they're unsafe.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, and members of the committee, we don't need a law to allow for that evasive action. And as Sergeant Barnum mentioned, that you wouldn't be cited by making a safety maneuver to avoid a collision. That is what's taught by Team Oregon instructors, is to avoid those risks. But putting yourself in that continuously more compromised environment, more constrained environment, reduces your choices. And that's the point I was trying to make earlier. You don't necessarily need this legislation to allow people to avoid the risk. And what we're saying is it's more risky. There's a trade here to continually operate in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, sir. Vice Chair Gorsuch.
And this either one, but probably for Sergeant Barnum. So what Representative McLean just described, though, is essentially an emergency. And the difference between that, or do you see a difference between the emergency and moving out to the side versus a long distance travel between numerous cars as you move along?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Gorsuch, as several of the folks who testified before me, very skilled, competent riders, talked about checking their rearview mirrors. That's a basic skill. It's a life-saving skill of riding a motorcycle, something that we teach our police motorcycle riders constantly, is to check your mirrors when you're slowing, when you're stopping, because you don't know what's going to come up behind you. As something Team Oregon teaches, move to that additional lane of safety, which could be between lanes. Mm-hmm. It could be the emergency lane. But then stop. There's no reason to proceed at that point. But if you continue to proceed down that lane filtering or that lane splitting, you then multiply your chances of either creating the situation, now creating a situation where you are going to impact the side of a car might not see you, and you then begin to increase your odds. So move down the road 30, 40 feet, come to a stop, a place of safety. And that's what we are encouraging people to do if they find themselves in that position where traffic is, so to speak, barreling down behind them and they feel unsafe. Not illegal to move in between those cars and put yourself in a safe spot. But then to continue the movement down the roadway for a quarter mile, half mile, a mile to the next exit, wherever you need to get to as a matter of convenience, that does now increase the safety and it does increase the risk for the general motoring public as well as the motorcyclist.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. Next, I would like to call up Zach Hull and Patrick, I'm not going to get this right, Leshock? Leshock? Thank you for being here, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
Look forward to your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Zachary Hull. I've been a motorcyclist for 25 years. I'm a founder of the SFRC, a nonprofit motorcycle group in Portland, Oregon, and a former chair of the Portland Mayor's Motorcycle and Scooter Advisory Committee. I'm also an Oregon native. I grew up here in Salem, Oregon. I'm a small business owner and a commuter. Over the last 25 years, Oregon and the Willamette Valley, in particular, has become an increasingly desirable location, leading to categorical growth. We see it in our property values, we see it in our population growth, and we see it in significant growth in traffic volume and congestion. And these growth trends are predicted to continue into the foreseeable future. These congestion challenges affect commuters, employers, common carriers, the environment, ranging from lifestyle sacrifices, lost production time, increased cost of goods and services, and notably, health and safety. SB 694 provides a virtually zero-cost element of what will necessarily be a complex and multi-channel solution, which irrefutably incentivizes alternative transportation, lowers wait times, eases congestion, lowers CO2 emissions, and improves motorcycle safety. You've heard testimony today on a variety of topics, most recently from the GAC and Sergeant Barnum, that permitting lane filtering would certainly raise the chance of collisions dramatically. That is an anecdotal statement. The studies out of California, Europe, every study that we have access to shows that that is, in fact, not the case. There is no certainty. In fact, it's the opposite, that allowing lane filtering reduces the risk of collisions, reduces the risk of injury to motorcyclists. Another point to speak to is that while it may be legal to move out of the lane of traffic, it is not trained. We heard from a former Team Oregon instructor that their training tells riders to, yes, look in your mirror, and then what? In the event that a car is coming up behind you, you might very well do that intuitively, but it isn't trained. And this is actually an opportunity to create that kind of training to provide measured, trained responses for riders to deal with situations in traffic that could lead to injury. The GAC spoke to the difficulty in applying this rule because of an inability to judge speed. In many cases, this law would come into effect when traffic was stopped. There would not be a need to judge speed in those cases. And so I'm not sure that that is a meaningful objection. And then finally, to your point, your question, Representative McLean, regarding the GAC's switch in position. As the representative of the GAC noted, they revisited this issue after the bill was amended to make it more conservative. So they supported it when it was less conservative. We amended the bill to lower the speeds, provide other additional safety features, reduce application to three-wheeled vehicles. And after those changes were made, the GAC changed its position, which I find surprising. In conclusion, while SB 694 will clearly not solve all the challenges we face as a growing state, it is an economic, actionable, and safe piece of the puzzle. And I'm here today to urge you to recommend passage of SB 694.
Right. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Committee. Thank you for the time to speak with you today. My name is Patrick Layshock. I am a former member of the Governor's Advisory Committee on Motorcycle Safety and a board member of the Sang Far Riding Club, an Oregon nonprofit organization. Those in opposition to the bill today have concerns about safety, property damage, and other things. I share those concerns. As a motorcyclist, as has been said several times today, I have everything to lose. I don't want to hurt myself. I don't want to hurt other people. I don't want to hurt my property either. I have no desire to hit a car as much as a car doesn't want to hit me. So the opposition is certainly has strong feelings about the bill, but as Zach mentioned, the verbiage I heard was things like feels that or most certainly will happen. Those of us supporting in favor of the bill have worked hard to bring the facts, the hard facts, to you for your review, and that's why we spent so much effort talking about that study. I can't explain the facts any better than my fellow supporters did, so I do want to mention a few other facts, though, and this is big picture stuff. Trains are not cars. Bicycles are not cars. And cars in the HOV lane aren't even cars in the sort of vanilla sense of the word. Motorcycles are not cars. When someone leaves their car at home and they take the train or they ride a bicycle or they commute with a coworker or they ride their motorcycle, they are going to reduce congestion on Oregon's roads and they're going to burn less gasoline getting to their destination. Their choice of transportation mode benefits all Oregonians. That's especially true at rush hour. It may only take an hour, may only be a couple hours in the morning or a couple hours in the evening. That's especially when this bill will be valuable. Allowing lane sharing with this bill, moreover, doesn't require building train tracks, doesn't require building bicycle lanes or bicycle boxes, it doesn't require freeway construction and signage. This bill simply makes more efficient use of our existing transportation resources. Each transportation mode is one part of Oregon's transportation solution, and each mode enjoys particular benefits. Those benefits encourage alternative transportation. It's only by taking advantage of those benefits for all transportation modes when the solution will truly work. Motorcycles are not cars, but motorcycles are an important part of Oregon's transportation system. Senate Bill 694 acknowledges the benefits and advantages of motorcycling as a transportation mode and lets them truly become part of Oregon's transportation solution. I thank you for your time and respectfully, Madam Chair and Committee, ask for your due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony, sir. Yes, Representative McLean.
The one question I had, I think I'm understanding it, but just I want to make sure. You were talking about the bill being more conservative because you had done dash one amendments.
That's correct.
And so that meant that the speed was down to 10 miles per hour.
Yes.
That was what the difference was.
It also, I believe, eliminated application to three-wheeled vehicles, specified it was two-wheeled motorcycles and mopeds, which was a concern, and it may have addressed travel in the shoulders and eliminated that as well.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Vice Chair Gorsuch.
I want to go back to a statement you just made. You would probably agree that somebody who works in law enforcement is not just giving a general
opinion, would you not?
I agree.
And you would also acknowledge that there's a lot of things in this document that, and I realize it was introduced by somebody else, but that are not, they're pieces of evidence from the European Union. And while we frequently think of ourselves as very European, for better or worse, there are differences culturally, are there not?
Correct.
And just finally, because I think we should be fair about this, we were talking about some assertions that some of these things were anecdotal, but the assertion about an Oregonian reader's poll, that's not scientific, is it?
Agreed.
It's not a systematic scientific piece of research.
That's true, though. It was, in fact, a poll that was conducted. So the assertion that it was conducted.
I mean, when I look at the stuff from University of Berkeley, that's systematic stuff.
Yes.
So I just want us to caution this idea that, you know, somehow the opponents are not giving out factual information and that, you know, you folks are. I think that there's some interesting things to be said on both sides of the fence here. But some of this stuff is definitely not U.S. and can be different and definitely is anecdotal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Did you have a response? Did you want to comment?
I have not yet seen the data that would support the statement that lane filtering is a more dangerous activity. And if I were able to see that data, I'm sure it would affect my viewpoints on this as well. I would love to see that, those studies.
Thank you. I think Representative Lively had a question.
So I'm just trying to understand a little bit more about this not trained currently to seek the center, because I saw the chart that was showing, and I used to ride motorcycles. I don't anymore. I ride a bicycle, but I have been trained multiple times to always look at what my options are, especially from escape routes. So why wouldn't we be training people currently that ride motorcycles to move to that space if they think there's something wrong?
It was my understanding from hearing the testimony of the former Team Oregon instructor that they did not coach riders to move out of the lane. They do coach them to watch in their rearview mirrors, but there's a difference between it being legal and being part of the training program. I've taken many Team Oregon classes and don't recall being trained to move out of my lane. So I was actually surprised to hear that it is legal to do that. And pleased to hear that it is legal to do that. I will take that into account.
Thank you.
We have a number of submissions on OLIS. There's a lot of testimony that has been presented, and I just wanted to note that Team Oregon did drop a letter for us, actually through the Senate committee, and it does indicate that Team Oregon is neutral on this bill. And I just, for those of you who are in the audience or watching on television or streaming this, you might want to, there's a lot of information on our system if people want to go in and read a number of letters that have been submitted, but there is one from Team Oregon. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here this afternoon. We appreciate your time greatly.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I believe we have two more people signed up. We have Troy Costales and Amy Joyce from the Oregon Department of Transportation. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I had a check and I didn't mean to. Would you like to join this panel or would you like to speak on your own, sir?
I'll be glad to join.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much. My apologies. My notes are a little crowded on here today.
That's all right. Yeah,
would you like to begin, sir?
Well, I'll be glad to. I can.
And we're honored to have you here today.
Thank you. I can keep my remarks fairly short, I think, because what needs to be said, I think, has already been said. I'm Wayne Allard. I'm Vice President of the Government Relations for the American Motorcyclist Association. Mm-hmm. And our board has adopted lane splitting as something that we should encourage at the state level. They've looked at a lot of the studies in which you have mentioned. Obviously, some of those studies don't hold up, you know, in the strictest standards as far as research material is concerned. Right now, we are funding a study with state dollars, well, out of the association that was state dollars, called the Motorcycle Causation Study, which we hope to get more reliable information. But we do think we have enough information to support this particular bill, and that's the reason I'm here. There's only one state that we've bothered to take an active role in and testify, and that's this state here, because we have a lot of confidence in the legislation that's before you. If you have any questions on how we reached our lane splitting positions in the studies and whatnot, if you go to our website at AmericanMotorcyclist.com, you can see the paper and our position there, and then our reference materials on there. And so I'm here just to tell you that we support this. I was more than glad to come here personally because I have relatives that are veterinarians here.
Oh, nice.
In, in Salem, and I'm a veterinarian, and I practiced, I worked in one of the practices, so I welcome the opportunity to come back to this beautiful community. And I want to thank you for giving me an opportunity to come here and make a few comments. I want to give you just a little bit of an overview, too, is that, you know, we have lane splitting in about all over the world, frankly, Europe, Costa Rica, the Caribbeans, South America, Africa, and the Asian countries. And a lot of these studies include what's going on. Obviously, there are differences in cultures and everything, but that was viewed as well as Australia. We have 11 states that have, or 11 pieces of legislation been introduced. The most active states on this legislation is the West Coast states. That's California, Washington, and Oregon. There's two other states that have got legislation pending, and that's Tennessee and Texas. We feel this legislation here is the most responsible and the one that meets our criteria the best, and that's why I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And you hail from Colorado?
Yes, I am.
Is this legislation that's being introduced in Colorado?
No, yeah. It's not being introduced. I'm actually spend most of my time in Washington, D.C. I did represent Colorado. I served in the state Senate, mm-hmm. been in your position mm-hmm. lots of times, very sensitive to what you're trying to do, and served in the U.S. House and U.S. Senate, too.
Well, sir, we thank you sincerely for your service.
Thank you very much.
You bring a perspective that I think we all have an interest in. I was back there. I came home night before last and was back. I'd love to send you back and have you work on the Highway Trust Fund if you could.
Yeah, well, we agree with you.
We could use your support back there right now.
We are working on it, by the way.
Good. I appreciate it. Next time you go back, put a good word in for us out here.
We'll do that.
We appreciate it very much.
I'm part of the Highway Users Alliance, and we're all pushing to try and get some highway money and improve our highways. Well, and we have the motorcyclists are the ones that can benefit the most from good road maintenance.
Great. Mm-hmm. I can understand it. Potholes are not a good thing for motorcycles.
They're not.
No, and thank you so much for
thank
your travel.
You.
Chair McEwen and members of the committee, I'm Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, and with me today is Troy Costales, the administrator of our Transportation Safety Division. We've submitted some written testimony that's up on OLIS, and Troy's going to, I think, take it from here and go over some points, and I'll be tag-teaming back and forth just a bit, if we may.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Troy Costales, Administrator of the Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. First, I'll start out in the safety arena. The agency's goal is zero fatalities and zero serious injuries on all roads from all forms of transportation across the state. And from that viewpoint, when we looked at the bill and what was brought forward in the Dash A version of the bill, as was mentioned earlier, we did pull data related to predominantly the Portland metropolitan area over an eight-year time period to mimic as closely as we could the way that this particular bill would play out. And that is where the zero fatalities and 14 injury crashes were from. I wish it was zero. The 14 crashes resulted in 22 injuries, and I do wish to mention that that did not happen at all. We also further looked at the crash data across the state because there's been interest from different people about rear-end motorcycle crashes in a very broad sense. So we looked at that crash data for all roads across the state and found that at 61% of the time, 3 out of 5 times when there was a rear-end motorcycle-related crash, it was the motorcyclist that was doing the striking from the rear end. And the part that we also look at is that more than double the time when that occurred, there was an injury that occurred compared to the other way around. Again, wish all of those didn't happen at all, and we were at zero. As mentioned, culturally, the differences in different countries compared to the United States, we also have a cultural difference between California and Oregon, and that is in relationship to the size of trucks that are on the road. And part of the concern in the stop condition area is the ability for the movement of vehicles, for all movement of vehicles in there. And the fact of the lack of the crashes and the fatalities within the area that this bill would apply is part of what we offer as the testimony to say the safety question in relationship that's been brought forward as to whether or not that would necessarily have an effect within the state.
Ms. Joyce.
Another item that we included in the written testimony has to do with the road environment itself. So, you know, ODOT has heard from time to time from motorcyclists who have concerns about some of the road features. So in Oregon, we will use recessed reflectors between lanes and also that raised vinyl striping. It's better visible, it's more durable, and we use that at certain places in Oregon. And we've heard from motorcyclists that they feel that is a problem in terms of traction when they're changing lanes. And yet what this bill would do is put the motorcyclist right on top of those road features. So that seems to be incongruous with what we've heard from motorcyclists in the past about those road features. Another item similar to that is they're sometimes called tar snakes, but the sealant that's used either on cracks in the pavement or in the seams where two lanes of paving will come together and use a sealant there, that's another item that has been expressed sometimes by motorcyclists that those are of concern. And again, yet we're going to put them right on top of that feature if this bill were to pass.
And Madam Chair, I appreciate the written testimony submitted and the verbal testimony today that cited various studies, because that's important in the deliberation of some of these conversations. And I'd like to point out just a couple things about the studies that were cited. The Hurt Report was done 34 years ago, and there's a citation in that report that says that report did not look specifically at the lane sharing, lane splitting dynamic in the report as it was written. The newest report that everybody has high hopes on, including myself, related to the California study, the preliminary report that came out does say, quote, it does have limitations and it is lacking some of the data that it needs. The ODOT literature review that was done in 2010, looking at a lot of the European studies brought forward, it does raise that there's significant safety concerns and that the lane sharing, the incidents when there are crashes across the world with lane sharing occur the most at the congested times of the travel day. And that the California report also has that same line, that the higher incidence of crashes and injuries are occurring in the congested times of traffic flow. Would also mention that in the California report, it does not specifically address what Senate Bill 694A does. Out of the 8,000 crashes that are in that report, only 294 are related to the low speed, and there is no subtable or subset of that group analysis to indicate whether that's any different than what the overall report projects. That would be my hope, and then the further study and the in-depth study that is yet to be released by Berkeley, that they would start to differentiate of what's going on in those certain dynamics and those certain conditions and in certain roadways, because right now it represents less than 4% of the crash information that's contained within that report.
And then if I may, Chair McEwen, following up again, as Troy mentioned, some of the specifics from the Berkeley study, I'm a little torn. I would prefer not to comment on a study that by its own statement is not yet complete or final, but it's been brought up many times, and one of the earlier presenters commented that he's got knowledge that it's going to come out the same. So with that, you know, the document, as Troy mentioned, says that there is more likely to be involved in weekday collisions, more likely to be involved during peak traffic times with lane filtering. And the other item, too, lane splitters, lane filterers, less likely to be rear-ended, but more likely to have rear-ended another vehicle than other motorcyclists. So the idea that this study is going to show that this is some kind of safety benefit, I think, is highly in doubt just by the very terms of the document that is out there, preliminary though it may be.
Thank you.
So to close, we've got some pretty serious safety concerns about this bill, but we welcome any questions from the committee.
Thank you. I think I have one.
Yes, Representative McLean.
You know, it's really hard to compare apples and oranges and bananas and mangoes and everything else, and it seems like we're having to do a little bit of that today, because we're talking about lane sharing with no speed limit, or lane filtering with some speed limit, or reports that may or may not be complete. But one of the things that interested me, and I think Troy, this was your comment, was that you said that 294 accidents, or 4%, was at the condition that would be the same as the passage of this bill.
Madam Chair and Representative McLean, that is correct. Out of the 8,000 crashes in the California study, 294 mimicked a situation where the traveling speed was less than 30, mm-hmm. and the motorcyclist speed was less than 10 mile an hour difference than the traveling speed.
Okay. So that percentage, I mean, that 4%, that's the thing that is more of an apple-to-apple type of a comparison. Is that true?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'm just trying to filter it all out, too. So thank you.
Madam Chair, may I make just one brief
Certainly,
comment?
Certainly, Senator.
I think one reason that it's so popular with our membership, and we're even contacted by people who aren't members of our association, is that this particular piece of legislation lends some reliability to the law and the situation in which the motorcyclist finds themselves. Without the law, then more of it is left up to the discretion of the officer there who is police in the area, or if it goes to court, he may be at discretion of the court. So this gives a little more reliability to the rider of the motorcycle as they're going down the street and making decisions.
Senator, if you don't mind, it's my understanding California doesn't really speak to the issue. They just allow it to happen.
Yes.
It's part of just what happens in the traffic patterns in California. Are there other states that approach it in the same manner as California does? And you mentioned that there are a number of states introducing legislation now. Has anyone passed it yet?
No, nobody has. California, Oregon would be the sort of the lead state in this.
Yeah, we've been there before on a few things.
Yeah, well, that was my next comment. I think, Oregon has shown a willingness to look at alternative ways of travel and encouraged it. Mm-hmm. And you have got a very reputable motorcycle safety program here. You have catered to the bicyclists, mm-hmm. and you've done a lot to them, and so that the drivers on the road, they're kind of used to having to share that highway, and that's one of the things that we looked at, is that the driving public in Oregon might be as prepared as anybody to be able to deal with this particular issue.
And do you
you had another question there. Mm-hmm. Oh, California has not passed legislation. They do have legislation right now that they're working on, and the reason that they thought they needed legislation, the unreliability of the law was brought up, and the lawyers got in and says, oh no, some said we had to have and some said we didn't. So they're trying to create some reliability in what they're doing now.
Have there been conversations in your association and among your members addressing the issue that Ms. Joyce brought up about some of the physical features that we have on our highways regarding
sealants
and dips? Are those issues that other states are addressing also? Rumble strips are another one. I was thinking that's got to be a nightmare for a motorcycle.
Well, it is. Yeah. It is issues that we have brought to the attention of the Highway Safety Administration, mm-hmm. and we have said, well, whenever you use some areas, particularly around Washington, D.C., they use a metal cover over the holes and stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, those metal covers get wet, and then motorcycles hit them, they're lost it.
Yeah.
And same thing with the sealants and everything. They are unreliable. But also, I can't remember whether it was Sweden or Italy, but one of the foreign countries has developed a surface and incorporated it into the sealant where it's not so slippery. So there is advances being made in that area where there's not the risk that mm-hmm. you have now with some of the sealants. And I think they're coming on the market in Europe, and I I think it's one of those two countries, but there's some country in Europe that's developed that technology.
Right. Well, thank you, Senator, for being here, and safe travels home.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any other questions for this panel?
I think I'm okay.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this issue? Mr. Campbell. I don't have your name on here, but you're welcome to the dais.
Oh, I don't know about that. Yeah.
Madam Chair, if you speak in a foreign language.
Yes.
Bonjour, Madame et Monsieur. Je suis. My apologies. That was last session.
Late on Friday. It's fine.
For the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of AAA, and I've also been informed by Mr. Russell that I should speak on behalf of the Oregon Trucking Association. I'm going to start by talking on behalf of AAA. Our concern is not so much about the way this law would be applied by motorcyclists, but knowing our own members and the broad range of responsibility with which they take their responsibilities as drivers. AAA has long been proponents of doing things that limit distractions within the automobile so the drivers can take into account their surroundings and be responsible drivers vis-a-vis those around them. Motorists at this point in time are used to the idea of having things behind them, things in front of them, and to glance to their right and left mirrors as they're choosing to move from one lane to another. Even in low mile per hour circumstances, unfortunately, we don't live in that world very often. And the concern is that if you allow something that a motorist is not used to seeing, without the ability to do adequate training of the motoring public, what will happen is a motorist will try and do something along the lines of the office space turn where they move from lane to lane without much notice because they're trying to get into that small gap that somebody left because they didn't accelerate fast enough compared to the car in front of it. And that might then result in a motorcycle who is lane sharing ending up being the worst for that decision. So that creates a great amount of concern for us as AAA, and so we wanted to make sure that that was on the record. And Mr. Russell's concern is a little different, and that will apply more to the judgment of the motorcyclist, because while we have the pictures that you saw earlier where you have a car, an open area where the motorcycle is, and another car, understand that when you have a truck involved in that situation, the distance between the vehicles is far closer. Now, one would hope that if this law was passed and you chose to enact it, that motorcyclists would be wise enough not to try to travel between either a car and a truck or two trucks. However, that is a concern that they've raised, especially considering the additional extension from mirrors on trucks, which can often not be seen very readily, and if you're not paying attention, they can be they've killed before. And so, granted, probably not at 20 miles an hour speed. So those concerns were ones that we wanted to raise to your attention, and so thank you for giving me the ability to come before you today.
Thank you for being here. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this issue this afternoon?
You're over here.
Welcome to our committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I did submit testimony. My name is Sean Severson. I'm from Beaverton, Oregon. I'm a former resident of California. I lane split for many years there. I just want to make a couple comments regarding some of the things that were brought up. Number one, the police sergeant talking about having an avenue of escape and constantly monitoring your rearview mirrors. I can tell you that lane sharing is a much safer option than constantly monitoring your rearview mirrors. I don't think that if you saw a car coming up behind you at a very rapid speed that you would have the time to move out of that car's way and be able to avoid that. To be lane sharing all the time, that is not a concern. You are essentially not even, you don't even need to watch your rearview mirrors because you're being protected all the time from a rear-end accident. And I think that constantly monitoring your rearview mirrors takes away from monitoring what's in front of you. And I also think that it eliminates the potential for a rear-end accident because you are not in the column of traffic. The other thing that I wanted to comment on was your concern about the center line features. In California, they have I don't know why they're called this, but they're called bot dots in California. And it's like a rumble strip, but does it present a problem to motorcyclists? No, it doesn't. I mean, you can move over 6 inches and not be hitting the bot dots all day. So that's not really a concern. The last comment I wanted to make, as I have moved from California to here, I've found that I have used my motorcycle considerably less for a number of reasons, one of them being the safety issue, because I'm always concerned about being rear-ended. In fact, 2 years ago, I was in a serious rear-end accident in my truck, and had that been on my motorcycle, it probably would have been a severe injury. So being able to have the option of lane splitting and taking myself out of the column of traffic, that wouldn't be a concern. So I just strongly urge you to recommend passing this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Do you mind if there are questions for this gentleman? Mr. Severson, it's heartening to know that you've come up from California and you've embraced duck football. So I we're very, very grateful. We need one more fan. We'll take it. All right. Thank you for being here this afternoon. I'm going to close this public hearing on Senate Bill 694A. And Ms. Petrino, we have 5 work sessions to accomplish. How long?
Before she starts, can I say something before they
Certainly.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to thank everybody that came today. I think almost everyone was a writer that was here, whether they were pro or con. And so it gave me much confidence that there were people here who had actually had the experience on the road, on a motorcycle, and actually dealing with all these different issues. And so I thank you. And also, everyone was well prepared, and everyone was really here to present material, evidence, issues, stories, and I think that's very helpful for our committee. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative McClain. We are going to, we're about 2 minutes past our committee closing time, so we're going to power through a number of work sessions. You're welcome to stay and observe the speed at which we dispatch these bills. And then hopefully we'll all be on our way to a very happy and enjoyable and safe weekend. So thank you all for being here. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 5. Ms. Petrino.
Senate Bill 5 would designate a portion of State Highway 126 between Florence and Eugene to be renamed as the William Tebow Memorial Highway. There was no amendments. The measure has a minimal fiscal and no revenue impact.
Thank you, Ms. Petrino. Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate Bill 5 be moved to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation.
It has been moved by Vice Chair Gorsuch that we move Senate Bill 5 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any questions? Clerk, will you take the roll, please?
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gorsuch?
Yes.
Chair McKeown?
Aye. And the other three are excused for all of these bills. I don't know if you can just make note of that, please. Thank you. The motion passes, and Representative Comp will be the carrier for that bill. Ms. Petrino, actually, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 5, open a work session on Senate Bill 120A. Ms. Petrino.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 120A would direct the Land Conservation and Development Commission to adopt or amend rules relating to transportation improvements. You heard the bill on April 29th and May, I guess the work session today is May 15th. No amendments, no fiscal impact, and no revenue impact.
Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 120A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Gorsuch moves Senate Bill 120A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any questions, comments? Clerk, will you take the roll, please?
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Yes.
Aye. Motion carries. Do we have a carrier for this bill?
I'd like to do that one. Would
Representative McClain will carry?
Ooh, well, there we go.
Transportation.
All right, there you go.
And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 120A and open a work session on Senate Bill 139.
Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 139 would decrease the membership of the Travel Information Council from 11 to 9. There are no amendments, no fiscal or revenue impact.
Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 139 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gorsuch. Move Senate Bill 139 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any comments, any questions? Clerk.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Yes.
Chair McKeown.
Aye. Motion carries.
Good job, by the way.
Do we have a carrier for this bill?
I'll carry it.
Representative Lively, thank you. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 139 and open a work session on Senate Bill 142A.
Chair members, Senate Bill 142A would subject vehicles owned by transportation districts and county service districts and intergovernmental bodies formed to provide public transportation to laws regulating motor carriers. There are no amendments, a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact.
Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 142A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Gorsuch moves Senate Bill 142A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Questions or comments? Nathan.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative
Plan. Aye.
Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Yes.
Aye. Motion carries. Do we have a carrier for this bill?
I will.
Sure. If you'd like to, that'd be fine. Thank you very much. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 142A and our last bill of the day. We're going to be 8 minutes late. Okay. Senate Bill 270. Ms. Petrino.
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 270 reallocates money between transportation projects funded by the Jobs and Transportation Act of 2009. No amendments, no fiscal, no revenue impact.
Keep it simple. Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 270A to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I would like to carry this if I could.
Vice Chair Gorsuch moves Senate Bill 270 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Questions, comments? Seeing
none? I just object to him already saying that. We haven't passed it.
Oh, I meant if we pass.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could we pass this bill?
Thank you. We pass this.
I just want to check.
I'd like to carry it.
And our esteemed clerk will determine that momentarily.
Representative
Lively.
Yes.
Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Yes.
Chair McKeon. Aye. The motion carries, and I believe that Vice Chair Gorsuch will be more than happy to carry this bill. Motion carries, and we will close the work session on Senate Bill 270. Anything for the good of the order this afternoon? Thank you all. That was very interesting. We have a lot of food for thought on this bill.
We do.
And I think there's the testimony was very good and very compelling, and we'll stay tuned, everyone. And on that note, have a great weekend. We are adjourned. Yeah. Thank you.